When extreme weather breaks in your neighborhood, you see a unique perspective of the world that nobody else sees. Did you realize there's incredible value in those pictures and videos in your own testimony of what you saw during a storm or during an extreme weather event? Today on the GeoTrek podcast, Julia Drapkin, founder and CEO of IC Change Incorporated, is going to share with us the importance and the power of harnessing all of these community observations. IC Change is an AI-powered data platform to help cities and utilities monitor, manage, and mitigate risk. Hey everyone, I'm Hurricane Hal, host of the GeoTrek podcast, where we explore the world to bring you stories about extreme weather and natural disasters not covered by the mainstream media. Make sure you like, subscribe, and follow our content online so you don't miss any of the latest content coming out from GeoTrek. Your interest and following of our podcast has made us the number two ranked podcast on the topic of natural disasters according to FeedSpot. So thanks so much for the support. And your following of this podcast allows us to bring you great guests like Julia Drapkin. Without further introduction, let's jump into this podcast with Julia Drapkin, founder and CEO of IC Change Incorporated. Julia, thank you so much for taking time to come in the GeoTrek podcast.
Thanks so much, Hal. It's a pleasure.
Julia, we're going to talk a lot about the innovative work you and your team are doing with IC Change. But before we get there, share a little bit about your personal story. How did you get involved in this type of work?
Well, absolutely. Anyone who's living on the Gulf Coast knows how critical weather is to our daily lives. You're in Galveston, I'm in New Orleans, but I grew up in Clearwater Beach, Florida, America's favorite beach. Long before it was America's favorite beach, it was my house. And, I grew up sailing and I, you know, learned to read weather. I learned to read storms and currents and wind. And one night in 1993, unannounced, the Gulf of Mexico entered our living room in the middle of the night. No warning. They call it the no-name storm of 1993, held the region's high water mark for a long, long time until just recently with Hurricane Helene. But I was all by myself. I was a young kid. My dad was out of town. I, you know, had to kind of help my mom and my sister. We were rescued by, maybe it was the National Guard, but they had big camouflage vehicles and, you know, drove us out of our house and we lost a lot of stuff.
And Julia, this was not a hurricane. This was in March, right?
Yep. Unannounced, you know, completely in the middle of the night. Such a dangerous time for an event like that to happen. Extreme rainfall, you know, high tide, wind, and all together coming at us in a way that had us completely and totally unprepared.
What impression did that leave on you? I mean, how did that change your perspective long term?
Well, you know, I don't know if it was apparent at the time. You know, my mother, of course, you know, broke out into hives every time there was a storm for a couple years after. But I feel that, you know, just the impact of extreme weather on our lives really shaped my career path. So I ended up being early on an archaeologist, and where you learn the environment and the weather shapes a culture, shapes the people, shapes the way cities are built. And if you study those things, you understand those things. And when I became a journalist and I covered natural disasters, I covered the Asian tsunami in Sri Lanka. I covered Hurricane Katrina here in New Orleans. And, you know, fundamentally, those events, you know, really exposed the mismatch between, you know, what's happening, what experts think is happening, what well-intentioned leaders think the response should be. And you have all these people on the ground who are experts in their own lives and know what they need and know what they've experienced. And that mismatch was something that truly became fundamental to our company, IC Change.
Well, let's talk about this. I mean, IC Change, you're doing a lot of, if you want to call it crowdsourcing, you're really reaching out to the people for them to have not only, I guess, receive better forecasts and better predictions, but also be a part of this, right? To share their experiences with you, right?
Yeah, I mean, it has evolved. You know, it started very much as a crowdsourcing experiment. We didn't even know we were going to be a company. We just knew that people were right and they were first and they had knowledge that was missing. But as we started gathering data across the country and the world, our algorithms have become so good that now we can ingest any kind of qualitative data. That's photos, videos, text from anywhere. And we've come to realize that this data is so important in modeling, in adaptation, in infrastructure design, and it's left on the shelf because it can't talk to the models directly. It's like apples and bananas, right? So we developed algorithms and a processing engine that takes apples and makes apples. You know, it takes an apple and turns it into a banana so the banana and the banana can talk, right? So modeling quantitative data is the banana. People's experiences, their stories, their photos, their videos, whether it's a citizen, whether it's a public works department who's just documenting what's happening, whether it's an emergency responder in the initial damage assessment process or even the substantive damage process, all of that data is just sitting there and it can't be useful unless it's translated. So our machine has, you know, basically created a way for this data to be useful. And what we find is indeed the models are making huge errors in terms of flood risk. We've seen it, you know, in project design. We've seen it in the aftermath of major storms. We see it in basic operations and maintenance of the stormwater system.
Julia, let's walk through a hypothetical event. Say someone lives in a Gulf Coast community and it's, I don't know, April, there's a no-name storm and there's just a four-hour deluge and all of a sudden water's coming up their yard. It's coming into their house. And maybe the flood maps and models suggest this area actually shouldn't flood. So how would someone then get involved with IC Change? How would they take pictures, videos, or text? And how would that get incorporated into IC Change?
Well, let me just take it from the perspective of that person, first of all, right? First of all, as soon as rain season starts, everyone should be taking pictures of their house just to have that base layer of before any kind of event at all. I mean, my house has changed year over year, knock on wood. I'm able to keep it updated and do new things. You got to make sure you document that stuff, and photographs are a great way of doing it. Secondly, when and if you see rain starting to pool or flood, that data is critical for your city, county, or town. Now, most people are not 311 users. We ingest 311 data on behalf of our customers. So a public works department, a county, a city. We also provide our IC Change flood reporting tools out to community members to use. And what that does is it provides a really important early warning metric of when the system is not performing well. So even standing water on a drain, it may take a hot minute, maybe year, maybe multiple years for your city to go and get that fixed, depending on their maintenance budgets. But the fact that it's there suggests that that area is pooling water during a regular rainstorm. And when and if you have a bigger rainstorm, that becomes a flash flood point.
So this could be like an early indication. Maybe you got 2 inches of rain in an hour. It didn't flood anyone's house. But the fact that one of the streets was pooling, you're saying that should be a red flag. It should be documented and put into the system so that it can be dealt with for a potential bigger event.
It's critical for your community, infrastructure managers, whether they be, public works department, the local water utility. But it's also critical for you because you need to know what streets are prone to flooding when it comes to parking your car, when it comes to going to work or picking up the kid. You want to avoid those areas. So having that documented is an act of remembering. We track that stuff. We ingest that. We'll take your photo and your video of a flood event. Maybe it's a storm drain. Maybe it's a 1 or 2 year storm and, the water's up to the curb. Maybe that water's up to the sidewalk and starting to encroach into people's yards and homes. God forbid, it's a 10, 15, 20 year event. Now we start to see private property damage. We handle all of it, all the way up to a catastrophic hurricane. And what we do is we take that photo, we take that video, and we turn it into a flood height quantitatively. And from there, we turn it into a flood extent and a flood volume. Then we send that in real time to the operators who are designed to manage either the infrastructure or an emergency event so that they know exactly what's happening. They know if they need a car, a boat, a plane. They know if property is being damaged. And the whole chain starts to move quite rapidly from there. If we have an event that is causing damage, we want to document that right away so that your local city or county can declare a disaster if needed. The faster they do that, the faster they get resources, the faster they get help to you. All of this benefits the resident. And we have, people who don't even know you know, who to report to. We also remove that burden. So when we're deployed in a city or a county or with a utility that has overlapping jurisdictional responsibility, our system is able to tell exactly who needs to know. If it's the water management district, is it the county? Is it the state? Is it a state road? Is it a city road? Is it a county road? It gets super messy, and all that messiness prevents very rapid response. So again, we're telling exactly who needs to know what is responsible and getting you either faster response to cleaning that drain, fixing that pipe, or, hey, this area, we're starting to see water pooling here in ways that the modeling doesn't match. Maybe this place needs a closer look from an infrastructure perspective. Maybe we need to, you know, do some repairs. Maybe we need to put in a project. Maybe we need a water storage project. Maybe we need some, you know, grant money from the state or FEMA. All of our data supports a flywheel of solutions from maintenance, emergency management, and those resilience infrastructure investments.
It sounds like these observations not only can be used for better planning, better infrastructure, but also even for emergency response during an event.
Absolutely. So yeah, what our algorithms do is, like, we ingest the data, we you know, get a flood height. And from there, we can tell if emergency responders need to know. So they get a text message from our system, especially on nights and weekends when nobody's open. So that ensures that kind of level of response and eyeing of situations as they're evolving. But if it starts to get into a situation where the road needs to be closed or private, you know, cars can be damaged or private property gets damaged, the emergency responders get a notification. There's, you know, IC Change is used in the emergency operations center in the cities that we work in. And, you know, we absolutely are managing this very gray area between infrastructure maintenance, public works, and emergency managers. There's an increased understanding that these two departments have been historically kept separate, but they really do need to work together. And in many respects, our infrastructure folks, the guys who are out there cleaning drains, repairing pipes, they're frontline responders. They are working before the EOC is open. They know where the problem spots are. So if they have better communication and the community is giving them better data, everything is working much more efficiently, you know, in response.
Julia, how are you acquiring information? Like, are people sending you things, uploading things, or can you also grab it off social media or AI, things like that?
Well, with the exception of social. So we do have our own tools out there for anyone anywhere in the world to use IC Change. When we are deployed with a city or a county, they get to decide how we operate. Some cities and counties do not want our tools out there. They want to just use their 911, their 311. We actually really encourage 311 rather than 911 for non-emergency flooding. Keep those 911 lines open for real emergencies. But for, you know, non-emergency flooding, we can ingest the 311. We ingest the data that the inspections teams are out there documenting on the regular. We also ingest all historical data. So if there have been past events, like, you know, we didn't have cell phones in 1993, but some people might have taken photos. Anything that has a date, time, location, and is, you know, a visual, we can process that. So lots of people have lots of random flood events stored on their phone. We have QR codes that just zoom it back up. We can create a historical flood record that is ground truth on day one with our customers, depending on how they want us to operate. Going forward, we then have live ingestion tools for that 311 system, for that complaint system, and our tools, our flood reporting tools. We customize them for our customers so that they have their logos. We're documenting things that they want. So some of our customers just want us to do flooding. Other of customers want us to do floods and drains, or all storm impacts. You know, there's a lot of things that happen during a storm, down trees, things like that. So that's how we operate. We also can ingest, you know, archives. So people do have, like, again, just folders hanging out on their desktops that have never been processed from past flood events. And all of that is just critically missing data in the mix when it comes to modeling, and then how it kind of breaks its way up the vertical when it comes to risk transfer or finance.
So, Julia, it sounds like anything, even if it's historical, as long as you know where and when this is useful for IC Change.
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's why social media is not so good. Social media has a really hard discriminating between the actual location As well as, you know, I mean, that's mostly it. Date, time, and location are critical triangulation pieces of information, and social media is just not the best at it. We can, you know, get some level of intelligence from social media, but I do feel like people are just throwing their stuff out into the social media world and not getting much back out of it.
Well, that's a good point. And when we see flood patterns on streets, you have to have absolute precision, right? Even just moving one block over, your elevation could be totally different.
Yeah, exactly. So we have ways that we handle validation and verification when it comes to data that's ingested into our system, as well as the means to correct as needed when we see mismatches. It is quite often that, you know, residents who are not trained in hydrology or hydraulics make mistakes. You know, what might be an emergency to them, you know, when you look at it, you're like, you're going to be okay. So there is a little bit of education that's really required over time. And we find that residents who use IC Change over time with very little intervention from us learn their flood risk naturally. It's a human being process. When we document something and we track it over time, we learn it.
Well, we see that too in a lot of these disaster-prone communities. We have a community where I live in Galveston where when water starts coming up, people say, well, we're going to leave our cars over at 59th Street and then walk to our houses because they've seen these patterns, right, play out for years. And so they kind of know where they can park their car. They have that local knowledge. Sounds like at IC Change, you're trying to tap in and use that local knowledge to help a lot of people.
And what we're trying to do is actually bring that local knowledge up into the system. The fact that people are doing that is not intelligible or meaningful to some of the bigger financial institutions that really need to know, hey, you know, if you're doing that, you might should deserve a car insurance break. Or, you know, if people are doing that, is there something that the city, county, state, the insurance community can do to make that easier for more people to do? Those micro adaptations that we are doing naturally, locally, are completely, totally invisible to the system. And when we make them visible, we improve the system.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I love how this, you know, really is connecting these pieces that were not connected before. I had a question. So we know in flood-prone communities, we hear about drainage being designed with basically a design storm. So, for example, I don't know, maybe the drainage is designed to handle 2 inches of rain in an hour. Let's say all of a sudden that street that we did not think would flood all of a sudden has ponding and flooding. Is it possible then to take what we're seeing in IC Change and kind of reverse engineer, maybe use some historical radar to say, what storm, how much did it rain in that hour to produce this level of flooding? Is that possible to kind of connect through what produced this level of flooding in this place?
Absolutely. That is a lot of what the work is. So what we have found is that, you know, it's not the rain rates that necessarily always require corrections. And it is, the radar does. It does require sometimes some correction. You know that well. But it really is the hydraulics in these places that really are not behaving in the way the model suggests. So if, you know, our system is actually really quite good in real time at identifying where in the system places are flooding that should not be at this level of a storm. So a 2, 5, 10, that's where we start to see things break down. Those are also the places where where the most cost-effective interventions are available. So we have measured the impact of our local utility here in New Orleans cleaning drains. So that basic drain maintenance, even if it still floods, is creating a flood reduction, a risk reduction act that we can measure and then turn into dollars. We've also measured in the city of Miami how, you know, basic maintenance of the system was really much more cost effective. The benefit costs of increasing their maintenance budget was going to buy them better flood protection than the very expensive projects that a lot of the consultants wanted them to build. So you use our data to make that argument instead of cleaning one out of every five drains, which is the national standard, which is also, you know, an untested standard for the record. It should be like 80% of the drains should be cleaned every year. You know, Miami now cleans half of all drains every year. It's phenomenal.
So IC Change was able to quantify and really dig into the details using data to say, actually, your better move here is to clean
drains.
Drains more frequently as opposed to a multi-billion-dollar project or something.
Yeah, but they also did use our data for those multi-million dollar projects. So the city of Miami used our data to go and get a grant from the state of Florida to $20 million. Here in New Orleans, StanTech and the city of New Orleans, we were, detailed to a couple of very high-profile flood infrastructure projects here in the Gentilly Resilience District. We were on two of the seven projects, and as residents started using our tools to document flooding, it was clear, compared to the model, that the lower income neighborhood was flooding more than the middle income neighborhoods. And as a result, the model was rerun, the citizens were right, and $4.8 million was reallocated to the lower income project within a suite of projects. That project was gonna fail its benefit cost tests in terms of federal funding, and it would have failed. It would have been built and people would have still lost their cars in a two-year storm event. Now, they're not going to lose their cars in a two-year storm event. That project was expanded in scope and size. The original design, it was a detention unit underneath the football field. And that was expanded by 2.5 times because of resident-generated data. So when we start to look at the benefit costs, like these ground truth data points are critical in the mix to make our mitigation dollars go fast.
Julia, what happens when you start using resident-driven data and maybe you find, wow, in this area of the city, we think the flood maps we use are quite inaccurate. Like, so how does that, what happens then?
Yeah, I mean, we would love to work with the federal system on, flood mapping. There is a formal protest, that you can, there's a period in which, a community can say, hey, FEMA, we would like to protest our flood mapping. We have not synced into that process. We've absolutely seen opportunities to work at that level with FEMA, but of course, with all the changes at FEMA, we're more likely to work with NOAA and the National Weather Service as of now from a federal level. They actually need this data too. I just came back from the AMS in Houston. And there's like so many ways that we're working with anyone who has a risk model or a flood map that needs correction or validation. So we are also partnered with the largest synthetic aperture radar satellite company in the world. They're providing, flood maps during real-time events, and, they still need ground truth data as well. And so we're working with them. So if anyone is has a stormwater model, a flood risk model, and wants validation, we're here to serve we're basically providing a 40x faster process for model validation.
It seems like your work is very versatile, working everywhere from local residents to satellite companies to, large organizations and government that's working with flood risk and flood communication. Julia, we've talked a lot about flooding. What are some other extreme weather, natural disaster uses where I see change, really can make a huge difference?
Well, we are pretty much an 80%, maybe 90% flooding and storm tool. We do have R&D on heat, which is not visible, but like a feeling and very much measurable from a community experience, and also quite important in the mix when it comes to the most expensive and deadly of weather and extreme weather impacts. We do have, just an incredibly talented team and ingestion engine when it comes to anything visual. So downed trees, impacts to power lines. We might even want to work on hail, and we can talk about hail in another day. Maybe there's a whole world of hail out there. We're very, very good at this. And I think communities, maybe I shouldn't say this, our team is, and our tech is amazing, but communities are really, really good at this. And they've really been left out in a lot of the processes. City officials, city workers, incredible talent. They have incredible data. They know what's happening on any given day in their town and any given street. And, creating an intelligence system that takes that ground truth into account is really our mission.
Julia, I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you can't think of this right off the cuff, we'll work with it. But have you come across times where you've interacted with locals and they're sharing something they saw or observed and you're like, you're blown away. Like, you're like, I never would have expected flooding to happen there, or, you know, hail to happen here, or something like that. Can you think of things like that?
On day one, every day, all the time. I mean, that's why I started the company, is that, you know, we didn't even start in flooding way back in the day. We started in drought and wildfire. That's another one where residents are really good at noticing when things are off in their community, well before a satellite might notice or pick up on a drought that's happening. We were in Western Colorado, and, you know, Western, farmers were, you know, they were fighting wildfires in the snow, like bushfires in the snow in February. And they're like, this is not normal. So 7 months later, you know, the USDA declares a flash drought. And we're like, no, these people knew way before that there was something wrong. So connecting the dots in that way is something we've always, you know, kind of is the backbone, is the DNA of the company, is that.
Well, that's it. Yeah. You're using those local lies to say, you know, something's off. You know, it's interesting, like when you go on vacation and you're like, you have this, you know, wow, this landscape looks like this to me. And a local would be like, oh, it usually doesn't. We're in an extreme drought, or it's usually not flush, right? Mm-hmm. That local perspective of maybe years to decades, it's very different than when you're just seeing it for the first time, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And again, just tapping into those subject matter experts as well. Like, you know, the guys who, you know, do work for the city, you know, they know what's going on. And again, capturing some of that data on behalf of those cities and counties has been a game changer. Like, we can be valuable on day one just with the photos that are hanging out on people's hard drives that no one's ever processed before.
Julia, how often do you see something really localized pattern stand out? Like, wow, out of these 45 streets, these two flood way more, you know, I mean, I would imagine ice change can get that granular and that zoomed in, right?
Yeah, the nuisance flooding hotspots are bread and butter, you know, and so that, again, that's, you know, we're in place in very specific communities and globally, but you know, on the regular about around high frequency, low severity events, the places where the model is missing, that fat tail, and the risk model has no data, but we do.
Yeah, no, I can see that, and you know, it's interesting. Maybe a lot of those events might not flood a ton of homes, but all of a sudden, six cars are lost on your street, right? It's that kind of thing. And like you said, they're high frequency. Place like New Orleans, Galveston, these Gulf Coast communities, coastal communities up the Eastern Seaboard, you can see these rain bombs, you know, multiple times per year, right?
Well, yeah. And I mean, if it's flooding during a one or a two, that is the most cost-effective place to do an intervention. And if you're documenting it, when and if you have a major storm, that's the place that's going to hurt the worst, first and worst. So, you know, tracking those are really important from the National Weather Service, the insurance, the whole system needs, you know, a database, and we're making it.
You know, it just stood out to me as you mentioned that it's almost like the landscape or Mother Nature is like tipping its hand or giving a hint, like quite frequently, not through major flood events, but through these more minor flood events that might happen a couple times a year. These are your problem areas. And it looks like no one's really caught on to that until you know, you guys step in and say, hey, we can help you see those patterns.
Yeah, minor events. I'll share. It's minor events that are nuisance, but also minor events that are never before. I won't share the customer because we're in the process of signing them. But, you know, we had a customer where, you know, there was a hurricane and, you know, prior to the hurricane, a resident had been flagging like that suddenly there was flooding happening and ponding happening. And she had lived here 30 years, 40 years. It had never happened before. We pay attention from an algorithm perspective to those posts because they are indications of a sudden change. And what she was flagging was that, you know, a ditch, like a levee had been, you know, impacted in the watershed. And when the hurricane happened, that was a flashpoint. So, you know, hindsight is 20/20. It doesn't have to be.
So she flagged that, and it sounds like you're saying, wait, this is unusual. This is a sudden change.
When we see sudden change, whether it's language, whether it's a data point that is, you know, in the database, like it never flooded here during a 1-2-5, but suddenly it is, you want to pay attention to those spots.
Julia, our listeners are going to love this podcast. This is so applicable, and you know, they're going to want to know, how can we be a part of this? So I want to ask you, how can people find IC Change? How can they upload their photos? How can they reach out to you and your team?
Yeah. Well, first I want to reach out to all the cities and the counties, the utilities, the flood modelers. The engineering firms, if you want to bring us on for a project, you can go to icchange.com and go to the partners page and download case studies. You can kind of fill out a form there that you're interested in working with us. You know, our best impact is when we work at scale in a community. But if you're an individual and you want your city, county, utility to pay attention to us, email them, send them a note. And if you want to start using our tools, of course, we have IC Change. We have apps on iTunes. We have an Android, just a web app. We make specific versions of IC Change for our customers. But if you're just anywhere in the world, we'll always keep a line of data open to anyone, anywhere who just wants to track change for themselves, for their neighborhood, and have that record for themselves to know when and if there's change. It can be really useful for making your own decisions.
You know, Julia, my favorite podcast where we can give people an action item, like you could be part of this. And you know, this is exactly what you're doing with IC Change. I think our listeners are really going to be interested to engage with you and be involved. Julia, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. As we close up, I wanted to ask you, what's one big take-home message you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah. Again, every observation counts. All those photos in your phone are really meaningful. There is hidden risk in the system that really impacts banks, insurance, access to insurance, our mortgages. And if we don't document it and make it visible, it really hurts us. We never wanted to necessarily work with insurance. We never want anyone to be hurt by, their data being used. But if we actually don't document this stuff and make it visible, insurance pulls out and then everybody loses. In New Orleans, Florida, where we're growing fastest, that's what's happening. So, giving more data to the system enables our cities, counties, and utilities to respond and they need to. So data is a plus. And to everyone in the system, yeah, models are our first best guess, but by no means can we just take a model's output and accept it as like fact. We need to ground truth all of our assumptions, and that's what we're here to do.
Well, and I love that you're doing ground truthing, but then using that community knowledge and a broad net of people that can be a part of this. Julia, thank you so much for taking time to come on the podcast. We're excited to continue following your work with IC Change in the future.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Anytime.
Julia, thank you so much for taking time to come on the podcast. A lot of amazing insights. It's amazing how you and your team are harnessing technology and community engagement to really have this archive of observed extreme weather events in communities, which helps people better prepare. It helps local government better prepare, utilities better prepare, because we have better information going into the models. I just wanted to mention, I thought it was amazing when Julia brought up the concept. Some people might think, well, hang on a second. If there's flooding on my street and I submit those photographs to an archive, am I going to be penalized by that? Is my insurance actually going to go up? She was very insightful to mention that the worst case scenario for our disaster prone communities is not insurance with a high premium. It's actually insurance pulling out. Did you know insurance does not have to cover our homes in disaster-prone communities? And in some cases, insurance is actually pulled out of communities. Could you imagine what would happen to the resale value of your home if insurance pulled out of your neighborhood? So really, as a community, observing extreme weather, having an archive, that feeding into the models will help us as professionals better predict risk, which overall helps us have a better metric on high-risk areas. I think in the long run, it's going to actually bring our insurance premiums down as a collective, but also ensure that you'll have insurance in your community in the long run. Julia, again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really excited to continue following you and your team with icchange.com. Thank you also to our listeners for your faithful support, for engaging with us, listening to our content, and sharing it with others. Your support and engagement has enabled the GeoTrek podcast to be ranked as the number 2 podcast for natural disasters, according to FeedSpot. Well, thanks again for tuning in. We'll continue to see what happens in our flood-prone communities as we move more into flood season this spring and summer. Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. I'm your host, Hurricane Hal, and I'll catch you on the next episode of the GeoTrek Podcast.